from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Dominican voters await the results of today's three-way general election race. U.S. President Bill Clinton again making the case for support for developing countries, and St. Kitts Nevis trying to protect its image against violent crime. I'm Ken Richards, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Voters in Dominica went to the polls today to elect a new government in which the incumbent United Workers Party is seeking a second term of office. The UWP is being closely challenged by the opposition Dominica Liberal Party, with an additional challenge mounted by the Dominica Freedom Party. Chief Elections Officer Rita Serafin says she has been satisfied with the voter turnout and was predicting that as much as 70% of the electorate would have gone to the polls. There was a steady flow to the island's 250 polling stations, as Matt Pell reports.
The polling stations were scheduled to be closed at 5 this afternoon, but the lines of electors were still long as last-minute voters were attempting to cast their ballots to choose the government for the next 5 years in the country's fifth general elections since political independence in 1978. There are 60,000 electors on the voters' list. However, many persons have been experiencing difficulties identifying their names on the electors' list in several constituencies, including the Roseau Central constituency. One returning officer reported that most of the problems are due to errors on the part of the electors who failed to check their names on the final list ahead of polling day. In most instances, the electoral officer says problems of the names on polling stations have been clarified. Chief Election Officer Rita Serafin says voter turnout has been encouraging. Meantime, the name of one of the candidates who withdrew from the elections race still remained on the ballot paper. One Freedom Party official told the BBC Caribbean Report that this had proved to be a problem, with some of the voters who appeared still confused about the matter. Ballot counting is expected to begin any time now, and the preliminary results expected sometime late tonight. Matthias Peltier in Roseau for BBC Caribbean Report.
One of the crucial seats in this election is Roseau Central, where the battle is mainly between incumbent Charles Savre, who heads the Dominica Freedom Party, and Senator Norris Prevost, the island's tourism minister. An opposition accommodation had seen the Liberal Party candidate for Roseau Central, David Bruni, seeking to withdraw his nomination in that constituency. But the chairman of the Elections Commission has said that that withdrawal was not valid. DFP leader Charles Savre blames the governing United Workers Party for David Bruni's name appearing on the ballot paper.
What I know is that both the Freedom Party and the Labour Party were advised by the Electoral Office that they were well within time in submitting the letters of withdrawal of their respective candidates. So as far as we're concerned, that was done. In any event, I mean, I would think that a person can withdraw from an election at any time. All that would matter is whether there is sufficient time before the ballot is printed. And I am advised that, in fact, a first ballot was printed without the name of Dave Bruni, and some authority instructed that a second ballot be printed with Dave Bruni's name on the ballot paper.
But Mr. Savre's claims have not been supported by the explanations given by the Electoral Office. Chief Elections Officer Rita Serafin says according to the laws, which contain a 7-clear-day stipulation, Mr. Bruni's withdrawal letter dated 24th January was too late.
So when you exclude the dates, the effective date of the letter of withdrawal and polling day, which is January 31st today, you have only 6 clear days. And not 7 clear days, in keeping with the provisions of the law. So as a result, yes, certainly his candidature, the withdrawal, is not in keeping with the provisions of the law.
Rita Serafin, and with the votes being counted, the three parties in the election race are keeping close tabs on that process as they weigh up their chances of victory at the polls. But what would a United Workers Party victory mean for the country, with its boast of a good record of development projects and opposition allegations of corruption? That's a question I put to Caribbean Report's Mikey Bruni.
They already have on the table plans like the international airport, like a new stadium for Roseau. And it will give them an opportunity to say, well, they have the mandate to continue with their development projects. At the same time, they would continue the projects under close monitoring from the opposition. And I would imagine over the next 5 years, if the UWP forms a government, The word corruption would be more broadly defined to include everything that is immoral, everything that is unethical. And certainly they would be working under the watchful eye of not just the opposition parties as organizations, but under the watchful eyes of the Dominican people.
How much of a difference to what's been happening would a Labour Party victory mean for Dominica?
I think it would give the island a new hope. The Dominican people had the Freedom Party in office for 15 years. They expected a lot from that party. In the last 5 years, when the party didn't perform to their expectations, they voted them out of office, and in came the United Workers Party. Everybody gave the UWP a chance. They thought that there would be economic benefit. They thought there would be new jobs. They thought there would be a new direction. Of course, with all the economic problems the world over, it was very difficult for the Edison James administration to do this. With the Labour Party will come at least another chance for Dominicans to expect something different.
And although the pundits are giving the Freedom Party almost no chance of victory, how would a DFP government benefit the country?
I should say the DFP itself must be seen its role more like participating in government in coalition with the Labour Party, if that arises.
Is the UWP likely to concede gracefully if it failed in its bid for a second term?
The supporters would be extremely disappointed, and I believe so the leadership. However, I think that since the Freedom Party and the Labour Party announced their plans to come together, there has been a certain amount of uncertainty among the leadership of the Workers' Party. When you look at the figures of the last election in particular, and considering that the Freedom Party and the Dominica Labour Party combined got about 2/3 of the votes, any sort of combination, accommodation, coalition would have caused a certain amount of nervousness among the camp of the United Workers' Party government. So that I do not believe that the leadership would be deeply shocked and would concede defeat. They are honorable men. However, a lot of the supporters would be extremely disappointed if they don't pull through tonight.
Mikey Bruni, you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Switzerland at the weekend, U.S. President Bill Clinton renewed calls for attention to be paid to the needs of developing countries.
Trade is essential to growth in developing countries, but it is not sufficient for growth in developing countries. Sustained growth requires investment in human capital, education, healthcare, technology, infrastructure.
Mr. Clinton had earlier in his State of the Union address in Washington cited the need to push free trade initiatives with the Caribbean and Africa. There has been reaction to this from the Caribbean American community, as Bevan Springer reports.
A prominent Caribbean politician in New York has commended the president on his clear, compelling State of the Union address last week.
To hear his speech and to see the vision he continues to have, he doesn't seem like a lame duck to me.
Councilwoman Una Clark argues that the healthy state of the U.S. economy and the president's visionary proposals for its sustainable growth are proof positive that the impeachment process has not affected Mr. Clinton's capacity to execute his mandate on behalf of the American people. The president's eighth and final address on the state of the American economy calls for significant tax cuts and spending increases. He urged Congress not only to pursue increased trade relations with China, but also to extend new trade privileges to Africa, the Caribbean, and Central America, setting the stage for Vice President Al Gore to embrace a similar position as the campaign trail heats up in the race for presidency. Mrs. Clark, who is expected to announce her run for Congress shortly, believes that opening U.S. markets to Caribbean producers and manufacturers is essential. She hopes to make Mr. Clinton's vision a reality if she wins the Democratic nomination in September and becomes the Caribbean's sole representative in Congress. While other Caribbean commentators expressed dissatisfaction with Clinton's remarks, the Jamaican Clark suggested that regional leaders take advantage of his advocacy and court Republicans, enlightening them about the region's needs.
We need to do what other ethnic groups do, make sure that we take delegations to the nation so that they can see firsthand what happens there and be more empathetic to it.
Last November, the Senate passed a bill that would give nations of Africa and the Caribbean greater access to the U.S. clothing market. The Caribbean Basin Initiative Enhancement Bill, however, was not ratified by the House. Bevan Springer, in New York City, for BBC Caribbean Report.
The authorities in St. Kitts Nevis are annoyed at international and local press reports about crime on the island following two recent murders there. One of these was what Prime Minister Denzil Douglas called the senseless fatal shooting of British tourist Tony Featherstone. In an address to the nation, Prime Minister Douglas said these recent incidents had done nothing to enhance the image of St. Kitts and Nevis as a safe and tranquil twin island paradise. He admitted that the government was particularly worried by the murder of a foreigner on the island.
We do not know for certain if it would have a negative impact on the image of St. Kitts and Nevis, but we understand that there have been a number of releases in the foreign press in the United Kingdom. And because of that, we feel very, very strongly that the government should begin to clear its image and to use this occasion to warn all thinking citizens of this country that they must not use this serious fatality as a means of gaining political points.
You've gone on record condemning the coverage of crime on the island as being exaggerated. What's the situation as the government sees it?
This particular incident is one in a lifetime. I cannot recall ever before in the history of this country any tourist being killed. We believe that the government, therefore, should not lose any steam in condemning this crime and in ensuring that the image of this country is, in fact, preserved. I use the occasion to call upon all sections of the media, all sections of the press, to ensure that they continue to promote St. Kitts and Nevis as a most desirable destination for our visitors and a place where one will feel free and comfortable in doing business.
But are you saying, Prime Minister, if there is crime, the media should not report it?
No, I'm not saying that at all. All I'm saying is that one must be warned that our political opponents here must not use this tragedy to tarnish the good name of this country in an attempt to win very minor political points.
You obviously disagree with reports that suggest that crime is rampant in the country, but how much of a need is there to step up action to prevent those kinds of problems in St. Kitts Nevis?
Crime is not rampant in this country. That is not true at all. And I think that the statistics from the police can easily show the correct picture. But we must not let down our guard.
Dr. Denzil Douglas. Britain's Foreign Secretary Robin Cook has called for greater dialogue with Cuba. Mr. Cook, who was addressing a special audience at the Royal Institute of International Affairs, urged other nations to be more open with Cuba. The Foreign Secretary also outlined his foreign policy priorities, dealing with everything from globalization to the drug trade, as Emma Joseph reports.
It was Robin Cook who coined the phrase ethical foreign policy, and he used his speech on Friday not just to reiterate his commitment to it, but also to set out the challenges of the 21st century. According to him, Britain is perfectly poised to deal with the changing nature of foreign policy because of a series of fundamental developments. Foreign Secretary Cook said that Britain has become a multi-faith, multicultural society. 200 different languages are spoken in the capital, London, alone, and Mr. Cook would like to use this rich cultural advantage and experience of tolerance to promote tolerance abroad. It was in this light that the Foreign Secretary admitted that while his government retained deep concerns about human rights in Cuba, that he did take the time to meet with Cuba's foreign minister. It was the first formal meeting of its type since the Castro Revolution 40 years ago. Mr. Cook admitted that his critics believed that the best way to preserve the purity of commitment to human rights was by refusing to engage with those regimes who abuse human rights. But, as he pointed out, while such a policy may leave Britain with clean hands, it is unlikely to provide persecuted people with better rights. Mr. Cook also reiterated his government's continuing opposition to the use of the death penalty, which was recently resumed on a number of islands in the Caribbean. Focusing on other aspects of the global agenda, Foreign Secretary Cook said that the more immediate challenges to British interests will be transnational forces. Turmoil in financial markets, as well as the spread of the drugs trade, were the key priorities that his government will be tackling in this new millennium.
Emma Joseph. And finally, jury selection has begun in the trial of four New York policemen accused of killing a West African immigrant last February, a case which has led to renewed racial tensions surrounding police treatment of ethnic minorities. The officers are charged with second-degree murder for firing 41 bullets at the man, Amado Diallo. That's Amado Diallo. That's it for this edition of BBC Caribbean Report. Don't forget you can join us from 11:05 GMT for our next morning programs tomorrow. I'm Ken Richards, saying goodbye from London.